Mr. Micione, please.
Your Honors, good afternoon. May it please the court. Your Honors, it is not possible to reconcile the complete and forcible takeover of the entirety of the operations of the Patterson Police Department with any law or past judicial precedent. And, you know, the court had heard argument about legislative intent and and I would submit that that is the only area that I agree with our esteemed colleague as it pertains to this matter, which I'm going to focus on at the beginning.
Try to keep your voice up just a little.
Yes, sir. My apologies. With respect to legislative intent, it is clear that both parties have this in common. The City of Patterson, a local government, as well as the Office of the Attorney General, are both issued their authority, their statutory authority, comes from the legislature. That's made clear in repeated cases before this court. It's made clear in the Criminal Justice Act of Section 102. But there's been a heavy focus on the authority that the AG has by express statute. I would like to focus briefly at the beginning on the authority that a local government like the City of Patterson has, because it hasn't been discussed to date. And I think you'll hear me argue that the terms are expressly clear. It makes it painfully clear that police departments are to be established and administered by local government. The legislature chose to invest police power in local government consistent with the historical home rule concept. And local governments don't derive power, constitutional power to run police departments or local government from the Constitution, but the legislature has afforded them that opportunity through enabling legislation. And some of that enabling legislation is NJSA 40482, a statute identified by our courts as a reservoir of police power, or 4041A28, which states that municipalities are and shall remain the broad repository of police power. Pretty unequivocal terms, I would submit to the court. This court has previously held in Quick Check food stores that this express grant of police power is to be liberally construed in favor of the municipality, consistent with the tenets of home rule and the Constitution. So in short, statutes granting powers to municipal governments are entitled by constitutional provision to liberal construction. Second, the New Jersey legislature also expressed its intention that municipalities control local police departments when it passed NJSA 40A14-118 that says municipalities shall establish and maintain a police force. So the police force law statutorily delegated the chief of police to be responsible for the day-to-day operations of a municipal police force, a point that was recognized in Fraternal Order Police versus Newark before this court. And then finally, the Faulkner Act, to which the City of Patterson subscribes, confers upon Patterson the greatest possible powers of local self-government and home rule consistent with the Constitution. So these cases and this authority has been affirmed before this court in cases like FOP v. Newark, In re Jersey City versus Jersey City PBA, where it specifically held the legislature has vested municipalities with discretion to determine powers, duties, functions, and operations of police departments. So the backdrop is broad and express power afforded to municipalities to administer and operate police departments. On the flip side, I would like to explore briefly what's been touched upon by the court and by my esteemed counsel already. What is the authority by statute from the legislature that is provided to the Office of the Attorney General as it pertains to supersession? It is clear that the AG gets his power from the legislature. And as the lower court ruled, the Criminal Justice Act and some of these other statutes are unambiguous. Nowhere in the entire Criminal Justice Act of 1970, in the 25 plus sections, does it authorize the Attorney General to supersede the entire operations of a municipal police department. Instead, supersession authority is reserved, as is pointed out by the court in Section 106, for county prosecutor's offices. That's the first of two references to supersedure. And the second narrows the legislature's grant of authority in Section 107. It relates to an investigation, a criminal action, or a proceeding. And in Section 107, it is similarly titled, Appearance of the AG for State and Investigations, Criminal Actions, or Proceeding. So the court below found that the CJA is specifically silent on this issue. And I would submit to the court, the reason they did is because the legislature never intended to convey broader authority than that as it pertained to supersession to the Office of the Attorney General. In fact, they wanted to reserve it and made clear with their other authority, which I've outlined, that the administration of police powers through the police department is specifically reserved for municipalities by statute. An important point, in 2019, that Section 107 of CJA, The legislature had an opportunity to amend it. They had an opportunity to further expand the supersession authority and power that the AG holds beyond what's already listed in Section 107. And they did amend it to a certain extent. They amended it to require the Attorney General to investigate deaths stemming from law enforcement encounters. But it's noteworthy that the Attorney General, that the legislature intentionally kept the scope of that supersession authority narrow, reiterating its constraint by stating it was for the purpose of conducting an investigation, criminal action, or proceeding concerning the incident, the same language that had existed beforehand. If the legislature wanted the Attorney General to have broader authority than that, it would have said so, as they did with respect to a county prosecutor's office in Section 106. The CGA, I respectfully submit, does not give the Attorney General the rights that he believes. It encourages cooperation amongst law enforcement agencies and provides for the general supervision of criminal justice. And this is done in an effort to ensure uniformity and consistency in criminal law and the administration of criminal justice under Section 98, which it is stated as the public policy of this state. But general supervision of criminal justice does not equate to complete supersession of an entire police department.
Mr. Gramicciani, yes, I want to focus on Chapter 94 with your help. Your argument today, of course, is the Attorney General did not have authority to take over the Patterson Police Department. And yet, Chapter 94 in Section A not only describes what can or cannot happen when a supersession takes place, it also, at the end of the Act, Part 2, says it's retroactive to March 1st of 2023, which is shortly before the Attorney General took over the police department. Is there any reason that the legislature would have made the act retroactive to that point in time, aside from the Patterson takeover?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. Our position is that it was, and again, I wasn't in the room during the legislative discussions, but it appears to be like a subsequent remedial measure to cover for what we submit is an overreach and an exceeding statutory authority by the Attorney General. It appears to be a way to try to fix that overreach.
So the question, though, is did it confirm, did it validate the supersession? Was there any other supersession that took place? We heard the AG say there was none since March 1st of 2023. Are you aware of any other?
No, Your Honor. I'm aware of one in Borough of Lavalette versus Ocean County Prosecutor's Office.
What was that?
I think it was 2022, perhaps.
So I just want to focus on the period from the effective date of the act. No other supersessions that you're aware of?
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor.
There's also an expiration clause that Justice Wainwright read earlier, and I'm just going to paraphrase it. It says, this act shall expire when the AG's supersession of a law enforcement agency of a size less than 200,000 is terminated. Right or wrong, if the supersession of the Patterson Police Department were ended tomorrow, would this act expire?
Presumably so, based on the language that you just quoted me, Justice.
So do each of those things then suggest or tell us that the legislature contemplated, confirmed the supersession of the Patterson Police Department?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because as the lower court pointed out, legislative history revealed that no witness or legislator ever broached the topic of authority directly supersede a municipal police department.
They did talk about Patterson,
but there wasn't any discussion as it pertained to the expansion of the supersession authority under sections 106 or 107, which is what we submit is clear legislative intent.
Is it not implicit from the legislative history of this matter and the way the statute is crafted that we've gone over, that they were authorizing, confirming, validating the Patterson takeover?
I have to respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think what they were doing, the purpose of the law was to be able to provide for the appointment or installation of an officer in charge, a law enforcement officer that wasn't PTC certified. And there's instances, I'm sorry, Your Honor, my apologies.
But if the supersession, if the legislature believed that the AG had overstepped his authority, why would they allow for the appointment of this individual in that position? Because Abbasi's appointment is a nullity if the AG does not have authority to supersede in the first instance.
Well, Your Honor, there's other instances where, you know, the appointment of a law enforcement officer who's not PT certified would be appropriate. In instances where there's consent, which is not the case in the city of Patterson, that would be an example where this law would obviously come into play if they chose to do so.
But it's very clear, as you discussed with the Chief Justice, that they were intending to refer to this specific super session that had already taken place. You conceded that if the Patterson police super session were to expire tomorrow, or were to be rescinded tomorrow, this law would expire. That means that it's clear that this law is trying to refer to the Patterson super session, which went into effect in March of 2023. So how can you argue that this law, even though it's so specific, you know, a population of less than 200,000, according a city of the first class having a population of less than 200,000, according to the 2020 federal decennial census, seems to say everything it could aside from the city of Patterson. How can you argue that this is actually not referring to this particular super session and is instead referring to some other possible super session where it was consensual?
Because it could apply anywhere. It could apply to any of the cities that fit that definition under the statute. And in the case of Patterson, it, like I mentioned, it wasn't ever broached the topic of expanding whether supersession was lawful or not. They focused primarily on whether you could install a non-PT certified officer in charge. It gave the attorney general to make that appointment authority. And it could apply in a situation at a county prosecutor's office. It could apply in a situation where a municipality or a law enforcement agency consented.
No, it specifically is talking about the attorney general superseding a law enforcement agency. So it wouldn't apply to a county prosecutor superseding, right?
No, what I mean is if the attorney general superseded a county prosecutor's office, and let's say, for example, they wanted to appoint a police chief, a county chief of detectives that was not PTC qualified, that's an instance where that law would permit the attorney general to make such installation.
And you're calling the county prosecutor a law enforcement agency in a city of the first class having a population of less than 200,000. I thought county prosecutors were responsible for a county and not a city.
No, Your Honor, that is correct. I stand corrected in that regard. But
what is your position with respect to, whether the supersession in Camden, which if I remember correctly, is also a Faulkner Act municipality, was legally valid?
We think that's apples and oranges, Your Honor, because in that case, the government officials involved consented to that takeover. There was no challenge in court, Spiney. I think there was a challenge by the PBA, but obviously that's not a government agency or a law enforcement agency making such a challenge in that regard. So it's never been presented before the court, which is why it is a case of first impression here.
Counselor, do you concede that a county prosecutor can supersede a local police department?
No, Your Honor. I know that point came up during my colleague's argument. I think the county prosecutor's offices have the same authority just within the bounds of their respective counties that the attorney general has, as set forth in, 2A-158, I think it is. So I don't agree with that. I think that they would be constrained in the same way that the attorney general is, based on 106 and 107, with the exception of taking over an internal affairs bureau if necessary, which
wasn't something that was conceded in argument before the appellate division, because the appellate division's decision seemed to be under the impression that there was some sort of concession on that point.
No, not that I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think I would concede that it candidly wouldn't make a lot of sense if the county prosecutor's office could take over in that situation, but the attorney general couldn't, because the county prosecutor is exercising the authority of the attorney general within their respective county boundaries.
But there have been multiple instances of county prosecutors superseding municipal police departments, and the legislature has never reacted negatively to that. So it's a little bit different than a situation in which there's a supersession from the AG down to the local police department with many more of the county prosecutors superseding. Isn't that meaningful that with all of those instances from the county prosecutor down to the local police department, there's never been a counter reaction to that by the legislature?
Well, I think part of the reason there might have not been a reaction is because in all those instances, the supersession was largely either requested or welcomed or at least acquiesced to by the local governing body. And that's why I think our case is different here, because the city of Patterson, since supersession, has challenged that supersession. So in those situations, Your Honor, I would distinguish it that way. There's been takeover situations where there's an incapacity, criminal activity, alleged misconduct, or otherwise, and it's required the municipality to either seek it out or agree to it or welcome it or at least acquiesce to it. And that's how I would distinguish these other cases. So those instances, well, I guess the legislature could have decided maybe we need the challenges. I just don't think from a practical perspective, they wouldn't, especially if the municipalities were endorsing of that supersession.
If you're correct, then we have the legislature on the one hand saying it's implicit, there's no authority, attorneys general cannot do this. And on the other hand, making provision for what's to take place when they do. How can both of those stand at the same time?
Well, Your Honor, if I could ask a question to the court, when you say making provision for when that happens, you're talking about the Chapter 94 law? As I mentioned earlier, I think that that is a situation that would apply when there's consent. And I don't think that it doesn't contravene or expressly rule out the earlier statutory authority that makes it painfully clear.
And yet you conceded that it would apply if the Patterson takeover ended tomorrow. And the legislative history, I think you conceded as well that it speaks about the officer in charge for the Patterson takeover. So how does this only apply, Chapter 94, only apply in situations of consent?
Like I said, because they didn't address the overall issue of supersession in legislative history. They didn't say, this is okay, we're expanding your authority under 106 or 107. And they certainly didn't address any of those issues with respect to being able to broaden that supersession authority that has statutorily existed as recently as 2019.
So it's your view, if they don't say it expressly and all they say is, here are things that we attach to situation upon superseding a law enforcement agency by the attorney general, that doesn't provide authority in this instance.
No, it doesn't answer that question directly. I would submit it doesn't. It presumes the conclusion had already happened, and that could be obviously by consent, but it doesn't squarely address the issue whether or not the attorney general has the statutory authority, whether an express grant to expand that statutory authority.
How about the appropriation of funds? Did the legislature appropriate funds?
They did, as I understand it, roughly 18 months after.
And
but I don't think that squarely addresses the court's question to me either.
So the legislature authorized $18 million for the attorney general's takeover of the Patterson Police Department. But you view that as, how does one view that, if not actual validation and support for what the attorney general has done?
This case, that's why we're challenging it for that very reason. I just think because of the funding, if the funding has been made, they don't expressly say, by the way, this is okay for him.
Why do they have to do that?
Because of all the statutory history that I've outlined for the court that makes clear that police powers are expressly reserved from local government. I mean, it makes it painfully clear, as does the constrained authority that's set forth in the Criminal Justice Act that says, you know, it's limited to a case, investigation, or proceeding in Section 107.
So is the appropriation of funds then invalid as well?
Your Honor, I don't think it's invalid. I think the funds have already been earmarked or dedicated, but I don't think it says what the court is asking me, that because they dedicated those funds, automatically it's okay for a supersession to occur.
So you argued earlier that from your position, Chapter 94 was some sort of subsequent remedial measure to fix the overreach by the Attorney General's office. If the legislature believe that this was an overreach of the Attorney General's authority, why would the legislature allocate funds? Why would the legislature draft Section Chapter 94 in order to specifically encompass the timeframe within which the Attorney General began the supersession process for the Patterson Police Department? Wouldn't the legislature have done something to fix this alleged overreach if they actually believe this was an overreach?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I think they would have, in this case, I don't think it was the legislature that's acquiescing to that. I think the state is the one that's is trying to seek that measure
heard of testimony at the hearing before Chapter 94 was passed, but the legislature acts on its own, correct?
Yes, but it didn't say what I think the court is. It didn't say that the authority for supersession is expanded.
I agree with Justice Pierre-Louis that you said this is a subsequent remedial measure. Even if it wasn't saying this authority is expanded for all time, How could you not read Chapter 94 as at least succeeding as what you called it, a subsequent remedial measure where the legislature says we accede to this particular supersession because it specifically is enabling that particular supersession and trying to foster it and make it more effective?
We would argue it's effectively like an implied repealer, and it's not clear that that express authority that limits the Attorney General's supersession authority has been changed. And in that type of situation, you have to honor that earlier.
Sorry, so where's the, you're saying it's an implied repeal of what? Of what particular statute is it repealing?
The limited authority. I'm not, that's what I, the limited authority that the AG has. Or
But sections 106 and 107, when I was asking your adversary on the other side about their specific language, they're not limited in that they don't say, and the Attorney General can never supersede anyone else in any other circumstance ever. They are, quote unquote, as you're calling them, limited, just in that they're very specific about granting the Attorney General specific supersession authority. How would Chapter 94 possibly ever need to repeal that? It is perfectly consistent with 106 and 107 for there to be some additional legislative authority, perhaps granted in Chapter 94.
But I would submit only upon situations where there's consent, and that's not the situation here.
Where in Chapter 94 does it say anything about consent?
It doesn't. And you're right, it doesn't, but that doesn't make the AG's actions statutorily acceptable. We still argue that
the legislature says they are.
I don't think the legislature is saying that by the passage of Chapter 94.
Do you happen to know when compared to the passage of Chapter 94, any challenges were first raised? Because Chapter 94 was enacted weeks after the Attorney General supersession occurred. So do you know when the first challenge existed?
Your Honor, are you asking when we filed our lawsuit?
When would the legislature have become aware of a challenge?
I don't know the answer to that, but we filed our lawsuit roughly 18 months ago.
November 15th, 2020? No. October 6th, 2023?
That sounds correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
Counsel, when statutes relate to the same subject matter, we try to read them in pari materia. We try to read them together. When we do so with the various statutes that we've now been discussing, where does that lead us?
I think it's a clear case of the Attorney General exceeding his statutory authority, but not just.
And 94 supports that position, is what you're telling us?
No, I think the earlier statutes that I cited to Your Honor make that clear, that these rights are reserved for local government except for limited instances. Yes, sir.
I understand. What I'm suggesting is we need to read all of them together. And then where does that lead us? Is it your position that it leads us to the Attorney General has no authority?
Well, Your Honor, I think you have to read them together when it's not clear what the intent of the legislature is. And we would submit that it is clear that the Attorney General is constrained in this fashion. But in terms of reading it together, for example, the vehicle that was used to make this change, the Internal Affairs Directive, if it's so painfully clear in the Criminal Justice Act and other statutes, then why did you have to secrete the language in an Internal Affairs
Directive?
I'm sorry? Yes.
Please keep the voice up.
Why did you have to insert the language that had never existed in its 33-year history to take over an entire police department in the most recent revision of the Internal Affairs Directive? If it's so painfully clear, why do you have to do that? It makes zero sense. And especially when you look at the Internal Affairs Directive, it's the statute that they cite to, Section 181, it says that it basically codifies internal affairs practice for all law enforcement agencies.
You're talking about internal directives by the Attorney General.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, that's how it appears this was the vehicle to get from point A to point B, is sending it this change. And even the Internal Affairs Directive itself says it specifically relates to internal affairs. It's completely inapplicable.
I think your point is we should be looking to the statutes, and that may take us in a different direction than where you are, or exactly where you are, but not the internal directive by the AG.
Well, yes, Your Honor. I mean, the Internal Affairs Directive does cite to the statutes we've discussed, two of them, two sections of the Criminal Justice Act, which I've already argued don't apply. The third statute is 4814-181. And none of these statutes, like much less discuss or even mention, at least that section doesn't discuss supersession of an entire police department. So that we submit the reliance is misplaced. It just requires the IAPD directive to be statewide policy for all law enforcement agencies for purposes of uniformity and consistency. So that vehicle of getting I've searched high and low for authority that would allow the AG to take this action. And I've considered that with other statutory authority that the legislature has expressly provided to local government. And there's nothing that authorizes that overreach.
Is it your interpretation of Chapter 94 that the legislature was presented with a fait accompli is the wrong term, but the AG superseded, and there obviously your challenge was yet to be adjudicated, and was simply trying to facilitate what needed to go on because the supersession was ongoing, in order that it be effect without coming to any conclusions as to an issue not before it, which is the scope of the AG's authority. Is that how you view this as the AG's, the legislature's actions?
Well, yes, Your Honor. Once the supersession was ongoing, I'm not aware of very many cases in which AG requests for funding would be denied in that type of situation. But again, we come back to the point that the issue of whether that supersession had changed earlier statutory authority or expanded it wasn't addressed.
You agree, though, that it's the legislature's choice. It could empower the attorney general to supersede, or it could expressly prohibit the attorney general from superseding, correct?
Are we talking about just the legislature in general? Yes, Your Honor.
Correct. Or are you arguing that something, it would be unconstitutional for the legislature to allow the attorney general to expressly allow the attorney general to supersede?
Not at all, Your Honor. I think the attorney general derives his power and authority from the New Jersey legislature.
So your argument on Chapter 94 is that the legislature intended it to be a subsequent remedial measure, but it turned out to be an ineffective one because they didn't actually remedy what they were seeking to?
No, I think my argument with respect to Chapter 94 is they didn't address the obvious point, the point that I believe is the obvious point,
is a subsequent remedial measure really what you meant to argue? I thought your argument was that the supersession happened, the legislature is not directly addressing authority, and there's some practical issues that have to be worked out because this has happened. But I'm not sure subsequent remedial measure is the right concept, because subsequent remedial measure is where somebody undoes the problem that's being addressed. And that's considered in some settings evidence that there was a problem to begin with. So I'm not sure that's the right sort of legal analogy to use there.
I think you're probably right. Obviously, Your Honor, it was a poor choice of words. And your conclusions is what I believe is the situation. I think when you're faced with clear statutory authority that's been delegated by the legislature to municipalities to operate and administer police departments, which I went through those statutes to include the Faulkner Act. And then you look at the constrained legislative authority that exists for the attorney general in terms of supersession. I don't think it's a clear question. I was
just thinking back of some of the school funding issues in the past where this court historically has ordered school funding that is in excess of what the legislature appropriated. And there's a conflict there. But with that decision being made, the legislature then appropriates more funding. It doesn't necessarily indicate that the legislature agrees that they were wrong in the first place. They were responding to a court order. So I'm trying to look for an analogy there.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I mean, like the legislature has not
here, of course, the legislature in Chapter 94 could have said it is unacceptable for the attorney general to have superseded the Patterson Police Department because, as we've previously stated, he has no such authority and therefore he shall stop. Or they didn't have to appropriate any money to support it.
I guess that is technically possible, but in practice, money was allocated here. I don't think that they've
responded to a court order.
Right.
They allocated it. It wasn't not a passive act by some other
Yes, Your Honor, but I wouldn't call that explicit endorsement of expanding the Attorney General's authority. That was never specifically addressed in the Chapter 94 legislative hearings.
Just a very odd way to express disapproval of something, to choose to appropriate money towards it. It's not the same as responding to a court order that orders a specific appropriation of money. There was no court order here. The legislature just chose to appropriate money to something that you say it viewed as an overreach. That's a very odd way to signal that you view something as an overreach.
There is no statute that says the Attorney General can supersede the entirety of a police department. And I stand by that today before this court. There is none. And on the flip side, I think it's expressly made the province of local government.
Counsel, I want to call your attention to a case that was decided by this court back in the 80s. It's In Re Board of Education. And in that case, we held that even though the Commissioner of Education did not have express authority to mandate an increase in a local school's budget, that the commissioner actually did have that authority because it was derived from their sort of overall supervisory powers to provide a thorough and efficient education. Now here, we have overall statutory powers to provide for uniform and efficient law enforcement and criminal justice, right? We're told to view that liberally. And I guess, why wouldn't or couldn't the Attorney General get the same benefit of that in sense of sort of powers that are derived from the notion that they should have broad supervisory powers to make sure that law enforcement is conducted in a uniform and efficient way? Why wouldn't they get that same type of benefit than the Education Commissioner got back in the 80s?
So I think what Your Honor is asking is agency decisions are typically given deference in the execution. And
it's a little more specific than that, right? Mm-hmm. There's phraseology that says that the commissioner is responsible for a thorough and efficient education. And there's phraseology that says the Attorney General is responsible for uniform and efficient law enforcement. If the court has decided that phraseology deserves a broad interpretation and that supports what's not expressly allowed for in the statute because of that overall supervisory authority, why wouldn't the Attorney General get the same benefit that the Commissioner of the Department of Education got several decades ago?
I would submit that deferential standard that you outline when an agency exercises statutorily delegated responsibility. But in here, once you exceed that statutory authority, essentially, all bets are off. And that case is City of Newark versus Natural Resource Council. That's what I've.
But in this case, Counselor, they acknowledged there was no statutory authority to order a local school board who had already voted not to increase the budget. There was no statutory authority for the commissioner to mandate that the budget be increased. Yet this court found that they had that authority because of their responsibility to make sure that education be thorough and efficient. Now, the Attorney General has a responsibility to make sure that criminal justice be applied in a uniform and efficient way. In that case, there was no statutory authority. It was derived from that generalized authority. Why can't the Attorney General's authority be derived in the same way?
I think that it's clear that the Attorney General has the authority to adopt and implement guidelines, directives, and policies that apply uniformly to all law enforcement agencies. That makes good sense to me. I understand that. But it is entirely a leap to take that and believe that translates into the entire takeover of a police department, especially when the legislature has expressly afforded the rights and responsibilities to run a police department like that to a local government, in this case, a municipality. And I think that is where I would submit is the difference is. I cannot tell you that I'm intimately familiar with the case that Your Honor references, but the best course would have been if the AG wanted to expand his supersession authority, he should have approached the legislature to do so. That's what's supposed to happen here. That's what's happened in so many instances. It happened in 2019. I think it was actually the amendments to Section 107 in that regard. if you wanted to expand that authority, that was the way to handle it.
So you haven't conceded that county prosecutors have the authority to supersede municipal police departments, but there's been some discussion today about that happening, you know, currently. I think you may have mentioned one township that might be currently going on with. Is it your position that with all of those, in all of those instances where the county prosecutor there's been a supersession of the municipal police department, those have been by consent? And if they were not by consent, that takeover was exceeding the county prosecutor's authority?
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. If now, again, they weren't challenged in court, so that's the major difference between this case at bar versus the one in the hypothetical you're referencing.
And again, we've been focusing a lot on the statute. You've been focusing a lot on the statutes in your argument. Where in the statutes does it tell us that there has to be consent in order for such supersession to occur?
It doesn't say that, but if the municipality holds the rights to run a police department, and they either request, welcome, or acquiesce to that supersession, then they're forfeiting those rights. And I don't think.
But you just agreed with Justice Hoffman with regard to the Attorney General's supervisory authority to ensure that there's adequate and uniform enforcement of criminal laws in this state. So there is the ability for the Attorney General to have some supervisory authority over local law enforcement. Would you agree?
Larger policy to set policies, but set statewide policy to avoid inconsistencies, Your Honor. Yes.
Section 17B-112C states that the AG may call into conference county prosecutors, the chiefs of police, and any other law enforcement officers of this state regarding the adequate and uniform enforcement of the criminal laws of this state. So I know you're making an argument that municipal police departments have, it seems that you're making the argument that these municipal police departments have exclusive authority over the operation and control of their police departments. But under 112C, if the AG can call any law enforcement officer and the chiefs of police into conference as they see fit to ensure the adequate and uniform enforcement of the criminal laws, what does that mean? What does Section 112C mean in relation to your argument that the local police departments have exclusive control over the and authority over the operation of their departments?
Well, that statute, Your Honor, it says it for the purpose of discussing the duties of their respective offices with a view to the adequate and uniform enforcement of criminal laws. So I think the term respective recognizes that these are two separate authorities. Now, that said, I don't dispute that the Attorney General has supervisory authority to, again, establish uniform policy. So there isn't 560 some potential differences in how criminal justice may be carried out, but nothing says that they can take over the day-to-day operations of an entire police department.
Let me ask. Nothing says that there needs to be consent for that to happen.
No,
but in the statutes,
if a municipality either consents or welcomes it, they're not challenging their statutory rights as afforded by the legislature.
And in Chapter 94, it doesn't appear as though the legislature is challenging the Attorney General's authority to supersession of the Patterson Police Department, even though it didn't say that explicitly.
I think it doesn't say that the authority exists. If the purpose of that law was to appoint a non-PT certified law enforcement executive.
In your brief, you talked about the 26 instances of supersession, and you broke them down into categories, which was helpful as to what the different situations were. One of those categories consisted of two instances of the Attorney General ordering a county prosecutor to supersede a municipal police department. Does the Attorney General have the legal authority to order a county prosecutor to supersede a local police department?
And I don't think so, Your Honor. I think it's limited to the Internal Affairs Bureau, unless, of course, that municipality, its governing body, or otherwise consents to that supersession.
And you said, sorry, that the county prosecutors don't have any authority, even regardless of whether the Attorney General has ordered them. You said that the county prosecutors themselves have no authority to supersede a municipal police department. They can only, if the municipal police department asks to be superseded, then they can step in. Or if the municipal police department is intentionally ceding their authority to the county prosecutor, then it can be done.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the county prosecutors have the same authority as the AG would, and it's constrained or limited by those provisions of the Criminal Justice Act.
Please finish your answer. I'm sorry.
Unless, obviously, the municipality is seeking it or requesting it or acquiescing to it. Sorry, Your Honor.
Was the supersession of the Camden Police Department unlawful?
No, Your Honor, because I think the public official stakeholders, all of them agreed to that supersession.
But if, in fact, that there is a statutory provision that places police power in the municipal, in local government under home rule and simply says the police power belongs in local government, how can a local official say, you know what, we got some problems here, come on in, when they are operating under, according to your interpretation of the two statutes that you cited on that point, they are operating pursuant to those statutes, and they not only can exercise police power when they feel like it, but they must exercise police power in order to be a valid local elected government. So why does consent dispose of any statutory problem that exists? Because you've made an argument that this is local government's job. It can't just quit when it's having some roadblocks and bring in the AG. It must exercise that power.
Because I would submit, Your Honor, the municipality in that case is surrendering that authority, and they're choosing not.
If truly the legislature, just as the legislature gives the AG very broad public safety and law enforcement powers, the AG can't simply wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to start to distribute these powers to other entities of government, other departments, other, you know, municipalities, counties. They should start doing this law enforcement power. When the legislature grants a particular power to a body of government, it's got to continue to exercise that if that's really the scope of its grant, doesn't it?
Well, it would, but I think, Your Honor, in this case, if they require assistance because of some incapacity or potential.
Sorry, doesn't the statute here specifically say the governing body of any municipality by ordinance may create and establish a police force?
Yes, Your Honor.
So where is there any statute that says that the governing body of a municipality must create a police force and must supervise that police force at all time?
Well, in terms of creation, once it's created, they've obviously indicated that they want to create one and administer a department.
But it was may. It wasn't required, correct?
Yes, that's right. But then in section 4041A28 states that municipalities are and shall remain the broad repository of local police power.
Going back to the Camden supersession, you've indicated that it was by consent, and you argued that was by consent, so it's a different matter than this case. The amicus brief submitted by Chief Scott Thompson and others says that that's an inaccurate representation of what happened in Camden, and notes that prior to the supersession of the Camden Police Department, the state had largely taken over the municipal functions in Camden. And even before that, the relationship between the municipality and the people, the heads of government in Camden, was very adversarial with the state. How do you respond to that? Because these are individuals that were very involved in the supersession of the Camden Police Department, and they do not believe it was largely by consent.
Oh, I would respond by saying there was obviously no challenge in court by any government officials or agency like there is in this case. I've realized that there was a PBA that might have challenged something in that regard, but
my question goes to the logical extension of your argument. And you said that Camden was different because there was consent. And I was looking at Chief Thompson's comments as well during your last question and answer. And he points to the state having stepped in and taken away powers of municipal government and replaced certain individuals there. If there was no consent, and Chief Thompson is correct, was it unlawful?
Oh, I guess it would take an agency or an official in Camden to challenge that, to make that determination. But I would believe so, because that municipality would be asserting its rights to run their local police department, and that supersession would be interfering with those statutory rights.
If if Chief Thompson was correct that the state had already taken over Camden to the extent that it had, wouldn't that only just mean that state officials were conceding to the state supersession of the Camden PD because there were no more local officials who were empowered in Camden. I thought that's what Chief Thompson was saying, that kind of the state had already taken over Camden. So it was, even if, regardless of how you're viewing consent, it was the state already controlling Camden and in theory consenting to another state takeover of a smaller part of the government.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's correct. And obviously Chief Thompson would know those circumstances best, but I think the important point is there was never any legal challenge to that asserting.
But if the Attorney General did something unlawful, just simply was inconsistent with the grant of statutory authority to his office, and there was no legal challenge, it's still unlawful, is it not?
I would submit, yes, Your Honor, I would submit so, but the obvious distinction is if it's not challenged, then
there's no yeah. judicial declaration that it's unlawful, but it doesn't, the lack of a challenge does not mean that the action taken was lawful, does it?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, but obviously this court would be the arbiter in that decision matrix. But I agree with you. It would be inconsistent for me to argue otherwise.
But what I'm saying is that the distinction you're drawing between some of, not all, but some of the situations that have been cited as precedent for this one and this case is that there's a legal challenge here and there wasn't there. I'm not sure that answers the question, because it's, while legal challenges are important because they end up having some decisions, which is helpful, one hopes, it doesn't mean that those situations are really inherently different from the situation, does it?
I can see the court's point, Your Honor's point. I would presume not. I just think, I know this is a case, I believe, a first impression, where this is the first time this city or a municipality or a governing body is challenging that authority. And so this, we took our case to the appellate division since it was an agency decision, and you all are the second court to hear it.
What your position is, if I understand it correctly, that the Attorney General lacked the authority, could not and cannot supersede local police departments absent consent, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, by statute, he can't trample upon those rights.
That would sweep in any supersessions that have taken place without consent.
Yeah, yes, Your Honor, I believe so. I do want to, in closing, I do want to bring it back to what brought us here today. I mean, the chief of police, Bert Ribeiro, was installed for all of 3 weeks before he was removed. And a lot of those supersession examples that were cited to by the court, you had situations where there was incapacity or alleged misconduct or administrative disciplinary issues or otherwise. And that's part of the reason why these local governments requested either supersession or at least acquiesce to it. You didn't have that here. He'd spent his entire career at the Patterson Police Department, was installed and appointed, duly appointed by the city of Patterson, and served for all of 3 weeks, and then summarily dispatched to serve 75 miles away from where he worked. And he's been doing it for the better.
Your adversary says that you could have, but chose not to, bring an arbitrary and capricious challenge. So you could have brought a challenge saying, we're not challenging the AG's authority under a statute to supersede a municipal police department. However, in this case, there was no cause for supersession because the chief had only been in his position for 3 weeks. There was no evidence that there was any problem with the department, whatever it is. You didn't bring that challenge, correct?
We did not. But we stand by what I just argued to the court, that I'm here to try to seek relief for rights that have been deprived from the clients that I represent. And that's what brings us before the court today. What you have is this policy. It gives complete, unfettered, and unchecked discretion to the Attorney General to supersede on a whim whenever he decides it's necessary. The reasons to this date have never been clear. The supersession letter that was submitted to the city on March 23rd, it cited to a handful of cases, none of which were on point here. They related to supersession of a municipal prosecutor. And then kind of the goalpost moved a little bit as part of this litigation, and now the reliance is on the Criminal Justice Act, which I don't think holds water.
Is it a logical extension from your argument that the reason that the legislature has never stepped in to definitively or directly empower the AG in this way is because there has never been a challenge? And if every circumstance in the 25 examples we saw were either mutually beneficial or beneficial to the community, and therefore the legislature didn't have a reason to step in, and that might be why there is no particular statute giving this power to the AG?
It's difficult for me to answer what the legislature might think collectively, Your Honor, but I believe there's sound argument in your point. Here, we are arguing that he exceeded his statutory authority. That's why we're before this court, to seek relief in that regard. Depending on what the court's decision is, it'll obviously give direction on going forward what the scope and limitations, as by statute, is, you know, how you balance the legislative and, you know, authority given to a municipality in this regard to run a police department or otherwise versus how broad the AG's authority is. But we submit the right course here is, if he wanted to expand his authority, he should have gone to the legislature to do so instead of secreting it into an internal affairs policy, changing the language after 33 years. And incidentally, in that policy, it refers to three statutes. Two of them are from the Criminal Justice Act, and one of them is one that I've covered that doesn't answer the bell, what section 181, in terms of providing that authority. So, as I mentioned, the goalposts have been moving on why or how, and it appears that the argument is, take all this together. And I would submit, if you're arguing collective sources of law, it's akin to conceding that no specific authority exists.
I'm looking at the original letter, and I think it says the authority for the attorney general or county prosecutors to supersede a police department that is derived from the Criminal Justice Act of 1970, 17B, 97 to 117. So how is that an example of the goalpost changing?
I am referring to...
I believe this was the letter sent on March 27th, 2023 from the attorney general.
I apologize. I don't have that letter in front of me. I'm referring to the one marked PA227 in the record.
Current letter?
Perhaps. I apologize. Okay. I should have it ready, but unfortunately I don't.
Don't worry about it.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Anything else you'd like to add, counsel?
Other than, Your Honor, as I mentioned, I'm here to seek relief for deprivation of rights for my clients. It's been going on for more than 2 years now. And, you know, this is where we are seeking our remedy. We believe that the AG clearly exceeded his statutory authority, but beyond that, trampled on the rights that are specifically reserved for municipalities to administer their police departments. And as we sit here today, Chief Ribeiro, Mayor Sage, they don't have control of their police department, which runs afoul of what I think is clear and express intent by the legislature as set forth in the statutes I referenced. I would submit that's the law that holds the supreme power, not a monarch who is basically creating this out of thin air on a whim and when he can go in and supersede a municipal police department. Thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honors, and may it please the court, as the counsel fortunate enough to represent an amicus before this court, in this case, the New Jersey State Association Chiefs of Police, I always want to thank the court for the opportunity to be heard, and I will do my best to come across as indeed a friend of the court. So for that reason, as set forth in our brief, we're not here to wade into the extent to which the attorney general or county prosecutor might have the authority to supersede. We highlight for the court that the first time you'll find anything expressed in writing about that authority is in the IAPP modifications made in November of 2022, where the attorney general says that he has the right to not only take over certain investigations, but an entire local law enforcement agency, quote unquote, where appropriate. The concern of the New Jersey State Association Chiefs of Police is, if we simply leave it there, that the attorney general has the opportunity to take over any police department at any time, with or without notice, with or without an explanation, for as long as he or she sees fit. That does not square with the way that the Criminal Justice Act 1970, as we talked about so many times over the past few hours, specifically describes the authority of the attorney general and, as by extension, county prosecutors, as it relates to supersession. So I want to focus on when this power, assuming it exists, when it may be exercised. Now, again, originally, if we look at the IAPP, it says whenever appropriate in section 1.0.5. But if we look now that it's been challenged, and I think it's the fact that it's been challenged is so significant to this court because we lack certain precedent, I am going to answer Justice Hoffman's question from earlier as it's been answered by the Attorney General nine times. It is, when is it that you can exercise this significant power to take away the rights of a local police chief who is statutorily and lawfully appointed and the rights of a municipality to decide how it shall be policed? So, according to the Attorney General, which has never explained it beyond the IAPP, we look at its initial brief. On page 3, the Attorney General says it can exercise this awesome power, quote, where the circumstances warrant it, close quote. That was the specific answer given by Mr. Zuckerman earlier in response to Justice Hoffman's question. He did not rely on the language of the IAPP. He relied on this language in page 3 of the brief. Page 20 of the brief says it can exercise this awesome power, quote, when necessary, close quote, as part of its law, its supervision of law enforcement.
He acknowledged, I'm sorry, that there can be an arbitrary and capricious challenge. So any party who is acknowledging that this authority exists, but is arguing that it has been misused in a particular circumstance, can challenge the Attorney General's actions in the appellate division by saying that this was arbitrary and capricious because there was no reason to take over this particular department.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, you won't find that phraseology anywhere in their initial brief. You'll find it on the last page of their reply brief. So that concession that the arbitrary capricious standard applies is very significant, and we're happy to hear it. The problem that we have is for a court to apply it, it has to apply it against a certain standard. And we're still trying to figure out what that standard is since the legislature never specifically set it forth. On page 28 of their initial brief, it says they can exercise this power, quote, where local law enforcement breaks down to such an extent that intervention is warranted. So again, the arbitrary and capricious standard there is whether or not it's warranted.
I think we get your point that there's a lack of specificity.
Well, I'll without reading them all to you, I'll identify for the benefit of the court page 29, which by the way says it can exercise the power temporarily. And then two pages earlier points out that it's exercised it in Clark for nearly 5 years. So we don't know what temporary means. Page 30, it says, in extreme circumstances that warranted, a significant adjective not present in page 3 or in the answer to Justice Hoffman's question. And then there's three different references in the reply brief, which I won't read. Page 8 talks about when it doing it when an agency is in crisis. Page 13, it's actually a four-part test. And in page 20 is where we have the concession that it can be done when most needed, but subject to an arbitrary and capricious standard. And then, of course, we have the 10th option to choose from, which is the three-part answer given to Justice Hoffman when there's an erosion of confidence in local law enforcement in order to provide for uniformity or for the efficient administration of justice. As the Chief Justice already noted, it seems that I've made my point, which is if we are going to allow the Attorney General essentially to write for himself something that the legislature never bothered to write, there absolutely have to be certain standards against which an arbitrary and capricious standard can be measured. And of course, part of the process is, well, how should this be exercised? There was a dismissive comment on page 10 of the Attorney General's reply brief in response to our concern that the police chief in Patterson was given no due process whatsoever. And the answer provided by the Attorney General's office is that public bodies aren't entitled to due process. They're a creation of the state. Well, I wasn't talking about public bodies when we made reference in the brief to the regulated community. We're talking about police chiefs, individuals lawfully appointed to the position by local government, imbued with all of the authority provided by law and with the tenure protections provided in 48:14-118. There is a circumstance, as obvious from Patterson, where, forget about due process, there was no process, no specific explanation to someone who had been in the office for only 3 weeks as to why he should be replaced. Now, again, we have focused repeatedly on the absence of very specific precedent on this issue, but we in our brief, and I'm going to underscore it here, direct the court's attention to Crema versus the DEP, a 1983 decision of this court. And I'm going to take language from page 301. Due process requires some standards, both substantive and procedural, to control agency discretion. So once again, if arbitrary and capricious is going to be the standard, they've conceded it. Questions from the court seems to embrace it. Measured against what standard? None exists. And so if the court is going to write on this issue, the New Jersey State Association Chiefs of Police think it's very important that we understand when this power can be exercised and what it means to be a chief of police who's going to have your authority stripped away. Unfortunately, so much of the briefing done by the Attorney General and by the ACLU gets wrapped up in the idea that there was an awful lot going on in Patterson. Patterson was, to use a colloquial expression, a mess. And so we have to come in there with a heavy hand and do what needs to be done to protect the citizens. Forgive me for belaboring this point, and I'll keep this less than 30 seconds, but folks, ladies and gentlemen, all the citizens here are relying on this respectful court to do what the courts in this country are doing right now, which is to stand up for the rule of law. And our respectful, humble request of this court is to recognize that when you say, well, certain things need to happen, they may not be clear under the law, but we're doing it in the interest of public safety. You see students hauled away from their universities because they've written an unpopular editorial. We see individuals who, quote unquote, are illegals in this country being hauled off to a prison in El Salvador. We see law firms under fire.
Counsel, let's come back to the facts of the case here.
Well, the facts, thank you very much, Your Honor. The facts of the case are that if we are going to allow the extraordinary authority that the CJA generally gives to an attorney general, then without standards, which the legislature hasn't articulated, and which the AG seems comfortable not to have put in the IAPP, if this court is going to authorize it, then we need to recognize that without some standards to assure that the power is exercised under certain circumstances and that it is exercised with all process that is due, that is left to this court in this instance to either articulate it or require that it be articulated. But to leave us in a circumstance where the Attorney General, and of course, when I say the Attorney General, I'm not referring to this Attorney General. I hope that's clear. I'm referring to the office, right? We don't know who's going to hold it in 2 years or 5 years. But if that individual is going to be given the authority to replace local law enforcement when he or she deems it appropriate with no other standards, the arbitrary and capricious standard is challenge is fairly meaningless because we don't know what it's being measured against.
What standard would you propose if you were to undertake that task?
So the arbitrary and capricious challenge, again, I think is a welcome use. But if we're going to have standards, I think that the best answer I've heard from the Attorney General's office was the one in response to Justice Hoffman's question. When there's an issue of confidence or uniformity, or it's required in the efficient administration of justice. But it was also an important concession from the Attorney General's office that that is to be exercised in extreme circumstances. And that's on page 30 of their initial brief, right? We've heard a lot of dialogue about that it's rare and rarely exercised. But if that's going to be enshrined anywhere, having it as part of an oral argument before this court or even in a brief filed by this court is not nearly as meaningful as having it in a decision written by this court so that future attorneys general, so that mayors of municipalities and chiefs of police who want to be as compliant as possible know what the rules are and know how to avoid being superseded and also know that if supersession is coming, they're going to be given notice and an opportunity to be heard, the fundamental bedrocks of due process. And unless the court has any further questions, we will otherwise rely on the brief.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. And again, thank you for the opportunity to be heard.
Mr. Zuckerman, rebuttal?
And in your rebuttal, can you respond to Mr. Gagliardi's standard that he just articulated?
I will, Justice Fischelli, yes. Good afternoon, Your Honors. This morning, I gave you four different reasons taken together why I think the judgment below should be reversed. I just want to start by, and this will all I'll say before I get to Mr. Gagliardi's points, just to say two things about the most recent legislative action, Chapter 94, and then to answer the Chief's questions on the budget appropriations. So on Chapter 94, which was enacted before these suits were filed, it was enacted July 3rd, 2023, Justice Noriega, and they did file their suit on October 6th, 2023. It provides several different kinds of confirmation for why this supersession was statutorily authorized. I think first, it does function as indicia of legislative intent, the way the subsequent statutory language in Lacey did. Second, it fits with the duty to harmonize statutes across the code and to read them in pari materia. which this court has repeatedly emphasized and which the Chief Justice brought up. Third, it provides strong textual evidence given the canon against surplusage. As Justice Wayne Rapter's questions highlighted, it's a statute that has no application without this supersession being lawful. And then fourth, if nothing else, and this goes a bit to my colloquy with Justice Patterson, provides a very strong piece of ratification for this particular supersession, because it shows that you have both branches working together, as discussed in cases like Worthington and the canonical steel seizure concurrence. But then moving from Chapter 94 to the other actions that the legislature took in response to this very supersession, you don't just have the AG's testimony before the Budget Committee and the language quoted by the civil rights amici from the budget chair. I do have the public laws, the Budget Appropriations Acts. It's the first one was enacted June 30th, 2023, so only 3 months after the supersession. The next one was June 28th, that's 15 months after the supersession, of course, long after they filed their lawsuit. Both of them do, as in the budget handbook, it's page 64 of PL 2023, chapter 74, and then page 204 of PL 2024, chapter 22, both of them appropriations, $10 million to LPS under heading Central Planning, Direction and Management, Direct State Services for State Patterson Police Department - State Costs, the same language in the budget handbook.
Give us the page numbers again.
Yes, Your Honor. It's page 164 of PL 2023, chapter 74. That's the fiscal year 24 budget. And then page 204 of PL 2024, chapter 22. That is the fiscal year 25 budget. And then finally, to Justice Fischelli's question and to Mr. Gagliardi's presentation, we have throughout this litigation maintained that arbitrary and capricious review exists as a check here. We argued it in the APTIV as well. I remember standing up and saying it, in fact.
But you see the issue with that, because arbitrary and capricious, generally, when you're judging agency actions, it's against a statutory definition of the agency's power.
And that is why I agree with you know, Mr. Gagliardi, I think rightly highlighted this morning. I did talk about the purposes of the CJA, and I think it's why you don't see attorneys general giving more definitive explications of the waterfront of when you might need to issue a directive, when you might need to supersede, because those interests are already outlined in the CJA. And I read the CJA, as I said earlier, to have three main purposes. One is popular confidence. The second is uniformity, and the third is efficiency, which I take to mean sort of efficacy.
Betsy, do you think that those? I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
So, do you think those from the CJA should be the standard, or something more along the lines of what Mr. Gagliardi suggested?
I think those are a sufficient standard. I think those are entirely intelligible and discernible, and I think this case is not the case to probe the finer contours of it, only because here no one has claimed that this was not in line with those.
Those are general principles and goals of criminal justice, right? That's very different from a definition of when a supersession can occur. And with all great respect to the lawyering that went into the revisions to the IAPP in section 2, there could not be more general, broad language invented in the English language than what was used here. And I won't take the time at this late moment, but it's basically the Attorney General can supersede for as long as he wants for reasons that he's determined to be sufficient reasons to supersede. I know I'm paraphrasing, but I salute the lawyering that went on here, because there is absolutely no limitations to the Attorney General's authority. And maybe somebody in the room wrote that. If that's the goal, bravo. But it does, when you say that those general goals of law enforcement as defined in the Criminal Justice Act are the measure, that saying that those are the goals is very different from saying it should be done or can be done under the following general circumstances, which is, I think, the point that Mr. Gagliardi was making. So what is the AG's position? Is the AG's position that there are no limitations on the discretion here, or that the court should try to craft some sort of constraint on what has been argued by counsel on this side is an abrogation of local police power?
So, Justice Patterson, our position is not and has never been that there are no constraints. And that's what we've been consistently trying to get at by making the point that we think arbitrary and capricious review exists for exactly the kinds of challenges, the parade of horribles that they are gesturing at.
I get that. And that's procedurally helpful. But arbitrary and capricious in those challenges, at least as to agency action, has some definition in the statute as to the scope of the authority. What if you were in our position, how would you characterize the circumstances under which the Attorney General may supersede?
So, Justice Patterson, I don't want to sound like a broken record. I'm certainly not trying to fight the question or the hypo. I do think I would say first that the Attorney General has always argued that this power flows from the Criminal Justice Act of 1970. That goes back to PA 227, the letter we sent to Mayor Saya on the day that we superseded. And we understand the power to be constrained by what the legislature has given us. And so again, as Mr. Grimaccioni said, this is the one point the parties agree on. It's a case about legislative intent. And so we do think that at least as this case comes to you, and I think all you need to say for this case, because again, the question presented to you and what the APTIV said was a categorical rule that the power never exists under any circumstances. And here there has not been a real question about it, but not been a question at all about whether this was a case that would fall in or out. Everyone agrees it would fall in on basically any, truly on any set of standards you wrote. So
why would it be the court's authority to set standards anyway? If this is a question of legislative intent and the legislature gets to decide, does the Attorney General have this authority? Why would the court be able to say, you know, yes, the legislature has granted this authority, but we decide that it should only be exercised in, you know, A, B, and C circumstance?
I mean, Justice Wade, after we take the court's supervisory authority seriously, and even just admonitions from this court, obviously, we take very, very seriously. So although I agree, I think this is a situation where the legislature has given a fairly broad delegation, and this is an issue also that's only been injected into this case by an amicus, still, to answer Justice Patterson's question, I do think the touchstones of the Criminal Justice Act of 1970 are the three. And I think that is enough, certainly for this case. If in a future case, there's some sort of edge case where a municipality says, we don't understand why you're doing this here. We think everything's going well here. I could imagine it being briefed by the parties and having full party presentation about exactly how much is necessary. But I do think, again, that here, public confidence, uniformity, efficiency are what the legislature told us to care about. They told us why they're giving us this authority.
What about Mr. Gagliardi's two other points, exercised in extreme circumstances and on notice and an opportunity to be heard?
So I'm sorry. Let me pull those apart because the answer to the two is different. I think extreme can mean lots of different things, and it's possible that Mr. Gagliardi's meaning of extreme is different from ours, but we certainly did write that in our brief, and we agree. Again, we're a state of 564 municipalities. This has happened on average once a year over the past 30 or so years. Two attorneys general ever have superseded municipal police departments, Camden and then Patterson. That's it. This office has never done it other than those two times. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about how we view it as a break the glass kind of tool, as opposed to a, you know, just do it because you feel like it kind of tool. Obviously, no one's saying that. As to notice and an opportunity to be heard, absolutely, we don't believe that there's any pre-supersession notice required. It's certainly not in this case. So I don't think, to Justice Wainwright's point, this court would reach it here. But regardless, I think that's a very dangerous idea. Again, policing is a paramilitary organization. This is a situation where you could have local situations that are not necessarily stable, where the Attorney General needs to make quick decisions in the face of potentially dangerous facts. And I think having some sort of protracted pre-supersession process is a recipe for disaster and totally inconsistent with the principles and the kinds of cases that Mr. Gagliardi is referring to. Again, I'll just also note, he said a few times that Chief Ribeiro had been removed or replaced, but that's not legally what's happened. This is just like Urich. He's still the chief. He still makes the exact same amount of money. There has been no He has been given a different day-to-day assignment, but
he himself didn't bring any due process challenge, correct?
I don't think he brought that kind of, I mean, they brought a sort of general ultra vires claim, and they had a few counts, and they were.
Specifically referring to notice and an opportunity to be heard.
No, the whole notice and opportunity to be heard set of arguments is coming in from NJSA Kappas Amicus. That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Nurse.
Thank you to all parties for the helpful arguments and for the very fine advocacy. Court is in recess for the day.